You're listening to the AmPod Interview Edition, featuring Pouramore Art.
Thank you for the introduction, Lexi, and wait, hello, Lexi? We are interviewing you today. Okay, I don't know quite what's happening, but let me just explain it. Hello and welcome to the AmPod. Today we are talking with Pouramore Art, Lexi being the voice of one of those two. And before we start, I want to say that if you're interested in hearing this podcast as an audio version without this whole YouTube thingy, there'll be a link in the description. So, Pouramore Art is a team of two, and I can say today we have both you, Lexi, and your husband here on the show. Hello, Lexi. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm very well, and I'm definitely ready to do a little podcast because I've actually used quite a few of your products, and we've worked a little bit in the past, so I'm going to be interested in getting a little bit of behind-the-scenes knowledge of Pouramore Art. And with you, we of course also have Yahir. Hello, Yahir. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing great. How about you?
Well, I'm doing very nice. So the reason we are talking with you guys today is because you're, of course, the company behind you're the guys behind Pouramore Art, which is a little bit of a hybrid type of NES because it both has a little bit of 3D printing and then has a little bit of this, not plaster, but plaster-like filament. For all of those who don't know who Pouramore Art is, can you just explain who you guys are?
So we're a little bit of a lot. I think what is more interesting in this podcast, or what we're going to touch base on, is the ant and spider shops that we have online. But we also do other things like photography, music lessons, and cakes.
And compared to the business, how big is ant keeping and spider keeping part of the overall Pouramore Art business?
I would say it's the majority of our business. It's what we've been focusing on the most recently. The music lessons are also pretty successful. I have a pretty talented husband, not to brag.
Okay. So what type of equipment do you then sell? If we just start by just, of course, you also do this little spider, nests, jumping spider nest thing. But this is an ant keeping podcast, so we will mainly today focus on this ant keeping part of this bigger brand that you actually have. But what type of equipment do you sell?
I think we have a couple of categories. The Formicaria, as you were mentioning, it's a hybrid concept. But we do more than just that section, right? I also like to think of test tubes as a separate category from the Formicaria. And on the test tube side, we have quite a bit of enhancements in some accessories that modify the functionality or the convenience of certain aspects of using test tubes. And I think test tubes are great. They have a lot of practical uses, and they're very somewhat easier than some other tools that we may use for starting a crane, for example, right? And then there's the other big part of the business is the glass enclosures. So we call them ant worlds, of course, with the ant keeping community. But what's going on with the spider side is pretty much the same as the ant worlds, or similar. It's basically the glass mixed with the plastic that the printer is giving us, and again, that's somehow another hybrid concept, right? We are able to provide some functionality to the glass panels because of what 3D printers can achieve, right? And I guess the other side is more like little tiny small accessories in general, right? Like liquid feeders, tubing connectors, adapters, some sort of small little items that can make some things easier, or if not easier, at least aesthetically pleasant to the user.
All right. So just a pop-in question. Why did you decide to go with glass and not acrylic like you see many other people do nowadays?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I think part of the answer is already in your question. Like, that is something that a lot of other people are doing. And I don't have anything against it, to be clear, right? I think part of me didn't want to copy or follow the trend. I just wanted to have something made at my style. And I personally, this is a personal choice, right? I personally prefer glass in the sense that I find it a little bit more durable when cleaning. I feel the surface is a little bit more slippery in a sense. I'm not saying I'm confirming that. It just feels smooth to the touch, right? The experience of using the glass. I like glass. And if you clean it properly, it also has a shine and a gloss to it, right? I also think in general, items made with glass require also a level of craftsmanship because I'm not using specialized robots to cut the glass, for example. There's a lot of manual work and precision in your manual work. So I think that's where the art keyword on our name kicks in. So I just enjoy working with glass as well. It makes a more artistic looking product, if that makes any sense.
I must say, as a guy who have tested quite a few different range of products, your products, especially the Nest, I really like the Nest because they just feel really premium when you actually get them in hand. I mean, I know they are based around 3D printing, but it really does it does something with the glass. I don't know why, but it just gives a different vibe to the entire setup. It gives this I want to say premium because it gives a little bit of a premium look compared to the other acrylics. And as a content creator, there's a different kind of reflections. And I personally like to record through the glass a lot more than through acrylic, but that's just a content creator problem. So how did Pour More Arts start?
The ant part of it started during the very first COVID-19 lockdown here in Canada. It was actually my daughter, the middle child, that kind of lit the flame, and it kind of snowballed from there. She's allergic to basically anything with fur, so she wasn't able to have any pets. And she got really into this colony that started coming into the home. So we noticed that there was some ants in our foyer. So she secretly was feeding them crumbs before we even noticed that they were there. And she started treating it like it was her pet. And, no pun intended, but we didn't want to squash her interest or anything like that. So we started investigating on how to keep those ants as pets in a contained space instead of all over my house. And that's kind of where it started. So we started investigating. And then that's when we realized that there was really no ant shop or producing ant nests in Canada. And so we saw an opportunity and we kind of started making our own things because it was really expensive to import from other places. We started making our own stuff and then we posted in the community and then people were interested in grabbing some and that's really how the shop started.
All right. So what were your reactions when you found out that your daughter was actually feeding the ants that were inside the home?
Well, I was like, oh no, what are we going to do? We need to fix this problem. And she's like, no, they're my pets. And I was like, oh, great. we encourage them to discover and take up hobbies. You know, we're not going to, even though I was like a little grossed out, I was like, oh, really? Out of everything, ants? Okay. But then I kind of figured I got into it too. Like it was really fascinating. I didn't think I'd like it, but in the end I did. And now she has zero interest and here we are.
Yeah. And you're the reason she's the reason why you actually started this part of the company at least, which is a very good well, good reason. So you said a little bit about you joined the community and started talking with the community, and your store have done something quite unlike many other stores, because you have a Discord server, and through using the Discord server, you actually own credits to get discounts. I don't know if this is still a thing, but can you just explain how that works?
Yeah. Well, I decided to, I guess, test it out because we were not sure how that was going to work out. And now we've been doing it for over a year. So the Discord had a ranking system in other servers that I noticed, right? I didn't really create that ranking system. And the ranking system, in a nutshell, I think it rewards you for how much activity you have chatting in the channels, right? So I realized that when the ranking was granted to someone, there was an option to give them a role. So I thought, well, what if the roles had a reward attached to them, right? Let's put a percentage there, and then let's see what happens. And I guess I'm not saying it's a big success, but I also don't think it's necessarily a big failure. It's just not a lot of people really came for the discount to Discord. And I guess that's a good thing. People didn't necessarily join the server just to get a discount. They joined in because they actually wanted to look for information and chat. We have a section that has journals, and you can see people passing through an experience of maybe a few months, maybe a longer time range, right? Everybody has a different experience with their aunt. And that showed me that people are just interested in learning and sharing, not so much in the discount. So we do have people using their codes and placing their orders and taking advantage of the program. But I wouldn't say we have an overwhelming quantity of people just enjoying the perks.
I think it's a nice small benefit for the people who are interacting with your server. I feel like it's a nice little addition. And like you say, people don't come to get the discount code, which I feel is also important. Generally, I really like the system. Quite unique as far as I personally know. So you have recently, I say recently, you I don't know what it's been, a half a year or more than a year or how long. But you, of course, took the jump into also making jumping spider setups or whatever, setups, I guess you can call them. And what is the long-term goal for the company regarding both the ant side and the spider side? And just the whole, well, I guess there's quite a few things within the Pormo Arts company. But what's the long-term goal?
Yeah, so we started making enclosures, and that kind of started because I found that spider keeping and ant keeping kind of go hand in hand. It's not uncommon for an ant keeper to cross over to spider keeping, and we had a client that was mainly a spider keeper who crossed over to ant keeping, and they mentioned that they were having a hard time finding an enclosure specifically for jumpers, that a lot of places offer more tarantula enclosures, and he was having a hard time finding exactly what he needed, and he came to us to see if we could help him out, and so my husband was able to design something that was based on what he needed, and then you know, spiders, oh gosh, I despised spiders, and I when this happened I told him, you better not even think about getting one. And he's like, oh no, I'm just helping, I'm helping someone out. And I'm like, I know how this plays out. And that's exactly how it played out. We now have a whole bunch of jumpers as well. But again, it was very similar to the ants. I was like, no, this is weird. This is outrageous. And then here I am, completely involved, and I could sit there watching for hours, and so then he connected with other experts, other spider experts, and kept improving the original design and coming out with other designs, and really there wasn't a Canadian company again producing these products for Canadians. Canadians had to go over to the US or, you know, overseas and to get what they really needed for their pets. So we realized that we could help our own, you know, our own people and in the process make it available for other people in other countries. And that's really all we want out of this. We want to be able to produce products that people need and don't see. And so if there's anything that anyone feels would benefit the hobby, anything that they would like to see available to them, we're more than happy to see if we can help you make that design and produce that product and make it available to you.
I think that is some very, very nice ideas to have within the company or and outside as well. You have talked a little bit about that you are, of course, located in Canada. Would you say that Canada is your biggest area that you sell to, or where do the nest go?
Sorry.
It depends on the product, I think. There's items that different regions tend to like. For the spiders, by the way, my surprise is that we are actually sending quite a good amount of enclosures to the U.S. compared to Canada. The U.S. has some very nice, good plastic enclosure options. And I think there is one Canadian company also making the style of the famous popular U.S. company, right? But again, plastic. So I think we're one of the few offering the specialized product in glass, and that's catching a bit of attention. So spider enclosures, I would say we're a bit of half and half. The U.S. and Canada are the main locations that they're selling on. Although there's been people from the U.K., that purchased as well, but not a big number, you know, but the incident is there. And then for Formicaria and keeping equipment, at the beginning, the US and Canada was somehow slightly even. And then the Canadian side got stronger. And then all of a sudden, there's other countries that started adding, right? So for example, orders all over Europe and some countries in Asia and so on. So it's been quite interesting, but it's still a big percentage of our customers, of course, are more local. They're more accessible to us.
Yeah, and one of the things that is specific to in Canada as well is you only sell ants to Canada. Do you send them to the US or is it only Canada?
We can only sell ants to Canadians. We can sell all over the provinces in Canada. We cannot cross any borders. There's without permits, which that wasn't our intention. Our intention isn't to focus on the live animals. We do have some available for our fellow Canadians and stuff like that, but that is available to anyone. It's easy for us to go outside and catch our queens, and we encourage that because it's part of the hobby. It's part of the fun. So we do have some available, but we encourage people to go and find their own. What we focus mostly is on the hardware, which is what Canadians lacked. In general, you can never have too much hardware, that was our main focus, and that's what we continue to focus on. And there are other businesses here in Canada and all across the world that focus more on the ants, and they specialize in that. And we appreciate that, and it's a lot of work to be able to hold that much stock of live animals and properly take care of them until they find their forever home. And we appreciate them, and we have no idea how they can do it. But we'll take the hardware, and we'll try our best to bring premium products out to the world.
I think it's a time management thing because, sorry. We have a business, like Lexi already mentioned, we have a business that we're friendly with and we work together in a sense, right? So I don't see the need to specialize in that area I see myself as in the business creating the equipment as a complement to each other. You know, somebody has the time and the resources to specialize in just the selling of the ants. Not so much the caring for the ants. Caring for a colony of ants, for a specific species, you can do the right things, and it's something that if done correctly, it's very, very doable, right? But it's a different story when you have to take care of, let's say, a stock of 2,000 ants, and then every 50 or 20 or 100 is a different species with different requirements, right? That is really, really what's different about the business of selling ants versus the business of manufacturing. And with the business of manufacturing, there's days where, you know, there's orders coming in at a steady pace and there's enough resources and time to serve everybody in the normal, timely manner. But there's times of the year where orders are coming in and in and in and in, and we're very excited about that, of course. But there can be a time where you're going, oh, wow, right now there's 30 projects that need to finish printing, 20 formicariums that we're waiting to cure, right? There's all the glass that needs to be processed for this and this and that. So in those months, we have less time to dedicate to the caring of a lot of ants. And unfortunately, it also happens to be that the majority of the heavy manufacturing happens when we should be outside enjoying nature and learning about nuptial flights and, you know, being able to capture ants ourselves. So that's clearly not necessarily possible at this point in time. We need more resources as the business is growing. But it is a goal in the long term. Also answering your question, in the long term, yes, it would be great if we can increase the quantity of species and the level of difficulty of the species as well, right? The variety to more exotic possibilities. But I think that's a long term when we have more staff to help us out to be able to accomplish that, perhaps.
Yeah, Phil, as you said before, it's always in someone that people outside get into ant keeping, which just means that there's more busy time for the stores, which is a good thing, but also the annoying time for everything to do well. Lexi, you said before that you can never have too much hardware, and I think what I personally really like about Pormor Arts, the ant nest at least, is here in Europe, we are having quite a big problem with 3D printing at the moment, because it seems every week there's a new 3D and a new company coming up selling the same 3D printed nest as all the others do. And I feel like it's really cool that you have these hybrid nests that is just, I mean, Tahil ants is a little bit of the same style, but else there is really no ant nest that I'm aware of that have the same kind of style as your products, which I personally really like. You talked a little bit about that every species needs different requirements and it's maybe hard to take care of one species compared to another and there's different things. What about your products? Are they designed for special species or are they designed for all species to go inside?
I guess I'll take this answer. There's a yes and a no. So here's two philosophies from the design point of view. I guess I'm going to talk from the design point of view. Because when you design a product, you also have to think that the user may use it as you exactly tell them to use it, or maybe not. Right? So one disadvantage of creating the products only thinking in one concept of specialty is that people are going to try to use it for other things. And then you didn't prepare yourself to the possible failures of, okay, but what if people you do this on this you know, on this setup. A good example is one of the newest products that came out. It's putting the tunneling idea of the classic formicarium, right? The two panels of glass sandwich with some soil or substrate in the middle. And it's placing this inside of the owl world, taking advantage of one of the walls of the owl world being glass, so we can pair it up. It creates more of an all-in-one concept. But instead of having the owl world at the top of the soil, right, we actually have an owl world completely attached to the side of that traditional concept, right? The challenge here was, and for the longest time, I've been trying to create a different version of this concept, It's just whenever you put a lot of soil inside of an enclosure, a contained space, and it has water on it, all of that water is going to evaporate and then make the our world very moist. Okay, so that means that our world has to be the most hyperventilated our world ever made, so that all of that moisture can escape and evaporate efficiently and still maintain a dry our world. And in the design, we ended up integrating incredibly fine lines that measure between 0.15 millimeters and 0.2 millimeters to capture all of the ants in the enclosure from escaping, but still allow as much as possible air through the entire enclosure. The challenge here is if I let's say I have a Camponotus colony, well, it's not a big deal, right? If I make the openings by any chance slightly bigger, let's say 0.5 millimeters or 0.6, or I'm mistaking the production, right? Well, not a big deal. Camponotus is not going to escape. But if the product was made without thought and specialization, for example, as you mentioned before, then all of a sudden somebody may put a species of ants in there. I don't know, even maybe Tetramorium, right? And Tetramorium all of a sudden small enough to start escaping all over the place. So I could say that if we make this product specific for Camponotus, then I may have problems with other species like Tetramorium. So what was the end result? No, let's choose a number. Let's calculate a very careful mathematical number that is going to give us a 99% certainty that all of the possible species that users may want to put into this enclosure cannot escape. I mean, I'm not saying 100% because you never know, but at least statistically speaking, 99, right? Can we get closer to the 100? So then the number was, as long as your printers are calibrated correctly in order to produce a line smaller than 0.2, ideally at the 0.15 mark, then you'll have the maximum amount of airflow with the minimum amount of possible escapes. So the majority of the products are made with that in mind. I want to create a nest that is going to be used, in my personal opinion, when I'm designing. I want to make this one for, I don't know, fire ants. And I want to put them in a tower-like design. Why not? But then what happens if people start doing this and this and that? And then you start doing some minor changes and fine-tuning the design. So it's not too specific, but slightly able to flex around.
I love hearing this inside knowledge of how you actually go out and design the nest and all of these small things you have to think about. It's something I, as a user, never really think about, but I'm happy that someone's have thought about it. And that's also why my DIY projects tend not to work out.
One thing I can add, talking about the user experience, is I think it's important to also provide options. So if you bring people to a page and then you show them, hey, there's a small formicarium, medium formicarium, bigger formicarium, this formicarium, that formicarium, this formicarium, that formicarium, how are they going to know which one to choose? But at least knowing that there's the options can actually make people go into it and start thinking about it. Now, we complement that with guides and, you know, more information in case people have more questions and need all of that, then I think they can make a better decision and then end up with the product that does end up being somewhat specialized for what they want, right? But that's been the challenge. That's exactly been the challenge, how to make things easy for the user, but at the same time, how to provide exactly what they need when they actually want something specific.
I think that's a brilliant way of thinking. That's really cleverly said. And looking at the website, I can also see that there are these spider care guides, there's these ant keeping guides, and there's a lot of information here. So there's really a lot to read on the website. And it's a clear way of getting people to look a little bit into the products rather than just buying whatever that is in stock. Now, we talked a while back about you were making some very, very tiny nests. And you said, I think it may have been in an interview with Formicast, that you are really into small ants and you design a lot of the nests for these small ants. Is this still a thing or is it more general ants nowadays?
We have a little bit of everything, but we do like to focus on the things that other shops don't necessarily focus on, and that's little tiny stuff, you know. So we think little things are cute. So we make a lot of small nests and inserts and that kind of stuff, and little feeding dishes, because we found that there was a need for those products, right? So that's really what, if you go to our website, you'll see a lot more of little things than bigger things. But we do also have things for all kinds of species and sizes. So we can cater to everything. But if you want small, we have small.
All right. Anything you want to add to here?
Well, it's also, the average experience for a person out there, when you start, you're likely to have more smaller colonies in the founding stages than find yourself with five medium or say mature colonies when you're just starting, right? So, and then unfortunately, there's also the unfortunately. A lot of those individuals may fail if they don't happen to have the right tools for getting started. And I noticed that it's very, very common that we buy big stuff, right? We don't know, either we don't know, or it's what's available, or we're just too desperate. I think that also happens too often, right? we just want to move on to the next thing a little bit sooner than needed. And I can get the excitement, of course. But I see the need for more smaller stuff more frequently than the bigger items. And I think a lot has to do with improving the practicality of the use. If I have five colonies of ants and I have a very easy method or a simple way to do something or a faster way or alternative, then I can actually care for even more ants. So I think a lot of the products that have been developed have to do with us scaling the quantity of ants that we care for constantly, because we are selling them to customers, we have them shipped over to us, right? Some customers share ants with us. And then on top of that, there's a lot of colonies that are being used for different testing purposes, right? So there's this product that we haven't released, but it's been on the shelf testing for a while. And then there's that product over there, and there's a bunch of colonies here in a rack in test tubes. So there's always been the question, how can I possibly feed the ants faster, right? What could I actually have so that I can accomplish this much faster? The nano dish is a perfect example. We already had, I think, a feeding insert, and then we had a nano feeding station. There were some small little items that were already very handy for us for feeding ants quickly, a lot of them. And the nano dish became even more practical because I needed to provide one or two drops of honey, sugar water or honey diluted with water. And on the other side, I wanted to put maybe 3-5 fruit flies. And I didn't want to do that in two separate dishes. I also didn't want to just dump the food inside of the tube. I didn't want to necessarily put a whole entire insert for just that tiny amount of food. So it became clear that, okay, if I have a tiny microscopic dish, then I would be able to just place that quickly into the feeding station. But oh, wait a second, if I make it small enough, it can even go directly inside of the test tube, or I can do both. And then that way, this gets incredibly fast. And when I want to pull it out, I just have to make sure I have a way to grab onto it with some tweezers, right? And have it be very, very small. So that's really what happened with the nano dish. The nano dish was not created as a product for any customer. I actually needed that myself. And then when it started to work really well, I said, okay, I think we should be including this everywhere, because I see people giving their ants at the beginning mass amounts of food that they don't really need that much, and they can create a little bit of a mess or bring too much food also into the nest for storing. And, you know, if you have a big nest and then they bring a lot of food inside of the nest for storing for later, that can go bad, right? So what happens if we make a little tiny small dish that helps you only feed exactly what you need on that feed, and you're more likely to feed them than every 2 or 3 days rather than once a week, right? Smalling servings more often. Yeah. And then the nano dish is now one of the dishes that we sell the most all over the place.
I really love hearing this, and I love just so looking at the website. There's so many small quirks, accessory likes. There's just things for everything, which I really like. And I really like how you've done so many test tube inserts, because test tubes are a thing, especially for small species, that can be really life deciding for the colony. You've talked a little bit about how long it takes to do maintenance, and it would be a little bit too much to also have a lot of queens to sell. Is this a full-time job of both of you, or is it just a part-time hobby?
I think for me, it's become more of a full-time job, especially over the turn of last year. For Lexi, I think she's been more in a part-time position. Not sure how she defines herself, but looks to me like that, yeah.
All right. So your nest, as we've talked a little bit about how your outworlds are made with glass, and your products generally are made with glass. Why did you decide to go with this? I don't even know what to call it. You can explain what it is, but this grout gypsum plaster material. Why did you go down the route of making these natural looking ant caves?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I overcomplicated things for myself for a while, because when I was in my DIY phase of ant keeping, again, can I do it myself? During most of the beginning of COVID, we were literally forced to be at home, and I'm not the person that can just sit down and, you know, watch TV or play video games for a really long time every day, right? Like, I just cannot do that. So I like getting myself busy thinking about things. And I had our first farms, our first formicariums. And I think my issue with the first ever nest that we created, the one that we created and started for our daughter, is that it was mainly made out of plastic, right? I had the 3D printers. I've been 3D printing for quite some time before doing this. So it was easy to create a plastic product. But at the same time, I think it was a species of Formica that we had at some point. And, you know, Formica sprays acid, I think, a little bit more often than the other species that I had at the moment. So I definitely could notice the liquids and the fluids, and that was not beneficial at all. So none of the walls, the glass, nothing in there was really capable of absorbing and neutralizing the acid. So calcium, for example, limestone, is really effective at neutralizing acid. So I actually thought, well, I guess this is why there's other products out there that are made with derivatives from cement and plaster and all these products, those mineral composites, right? And I think at the time I had noticed in Europe, the brick, yutong, right, more common or familiar or accessible to Europe. Here in America, North America, that's not really something that you see on your hardware store. Like, you go looking for it everywhere, you just cannot find it anywhere. So if it's going to be expensive to just buy one brick and have it shipped from too far, then that kind of doesn't feel very DIY in the sense of saving money and being practical, right? So, okay, what if we make the material? Then what are the options, right? How can we cast? So the first nests that were ever made did actually... they were actually completely made out of a mixture of plaster and cement and grout, different materials. And I liked them, and they gave me what I was looking for, the absorbent material that could be a buffer for acids, for example, and provide that more natural texture, I guess, more similar to the absorbency that you find in the soils on the ground for those species. But I then was not very happy with the fact that they evaporate more water on the walls. There's more humidity moving from the inside of the nest, which is where you want to keep it, and then moving outwards and just evaporating on the walls. So I thought, well, this is forcing me to put more water and to have to use more water and to have more water flow through this setup over the year. Right? I like to think of, and I don't know how many people have thought about this, but have you ever thought of measuring how much water did I actually end up dosing and administering this setup over the span of 1 year? You can collect it in a bottle. You think it's going to be 100 milliliters or maybe 1.5 liters, right? And then there's another question that arises, which is, And what kind of water are people putting in their nests? Is it heavy mineral water with even maybe some toxins from the tap? So if they are passing through even more water than some other designs of nests because they just evaporate more, does that mean they're also leaving more minerals and salts and chemicals and things on the substrate, right? On the absorbent walls that are evaporating water. So again, overcomplicating things a little bit, that's when I decided, okay, so then I need to have a substrate. It has to have these qualities, but I can slow down that substrate from evaporating if I cover it with plastic, if I surround it by a hard shell that is now water absorbent, doesn't transfer humidity the same way. And 3D prints, the plastic can actually breathe. 3D prints are hard to make incredibly waterproof. And the intention is not to make them waterproof. You do want them to be able to breathe a little bit. But at least they don't evaporate at all water at the same rate that you would have a pure stone nest, right? That has the walls exposed. And I think this is why in some popular designs you have the paint outside, right? The paint is trying to help you keep the moisture in from the walls outside and whatnot. So a little bit more of testing and whatnot and developing, and that's when trying to figure out how to transfer water from one place to the other, in what amount, how should that be considered, right? And then the whole design of the plastic and the substrate became a thing. And then that took quite a while to figure out how to get the substrate to act the way it should act, to be nice enough, to have the right texture and feeling, not just a hard, smooth surface of plaster, for example, or cement. Also, that's not necessarily very useful, right? And then on top of that, to make sure that it stays in place. Most of the first experiments that were done, that was the number one challenge, making sure the mixture was perfect to ensure it actually stayed in place.
So how long does it take to then make the insides of a nest? Is it one big... How do you make it? Because it's both on the ceiling, it's on the floor, it's on the sides. How wet is it to work with?
Well, we can't tell you how we make it.
No.
Because then...
Not directly, but is it...
Well, yeah. It used to take a month. It used to take me a month to process. Like the first nest I ever did, right? I'm not talking about commercially we were making nests and it takes a month to make one nest. I think once the product got, we figure out how to make the manufacturing reliable, right, and predictable and replicable, that's when, okay, let's put this design in the market. Okay, we were ready for it. But nowadays, let's say I have to start a nest on a Monday morning, right? Let's say Monday morning, first thing I have to do is, let's say I'm going to make the cave 2.0. I need to make the cave. So the cave, you're going to have your plastic component, which is the first thing that needs to be made, right? We need the skeleton. That's what the plastic component is doing. And that's going to be ready probably by midday. Just the plastic part. And then after that, you got to install magnets. The magnets need to be installed first before you do anything else. Because they're sealed in place. So if you by any chance get any of the mineral mix into the cavities, and if you start putting all of that powder, right, mixture into the walls of the plastic, then things are not going to stick. So it's better to install the magnets first. The problem with installing the magnets first is that now you have to wait for them to cure. And that can take a little bit of time. So we're talking now Tuesday. Tuesday, then the frame and the magnets are installed. So now we need to set up the hydration system. There's somewhat of an agent that is inside of the water chambers that actually helps you carry the water also inside of the nest. So that needs to be installed first. And then after that, we would have some of the first coatings for the substrate. It's not one application. There's multiple layers to achieve the desired mixture. And then that has to go in air dry, relatively warm air. And then again, another application. So now we're probably talking about Wednesday morning, right? Wednesday morning, there's the last application, the part that you get to see, right? Where you can see that rug texture and all these little tiny crevices and things that ants can hold on to and spin and do their things with the substrate, right? And then finally, after that, the unit needs to wash and cure. So wash and cure. And that's the part that I was able to save a lot of time. Like I said, I used to take a whole entire month to be able to use product because of the curing process. One of the things that I have worked a lot on is making sure that the product can leave the facility faster, but knowing that if you open it and receive it today and you use it, you actually have a safe product. And why am I saying this? Because whenever you make a nest out of a plaster mixture or cement mixture or grout, or, you know, most of those materials are the same thing, right? They have more or less the same components. It's just different percentages, but more or less the same components. Small variations in the chemical, components. If you don't wait correctly and you don't ensure that you have a properly cured product, the product's going to start releasing some chemicals that are somewhat corrosive to ants. And that's why you have some fatalities with DIY. Oh, I made this nest and I put my ants in, and then the next day I came in and they were all dead. Right. So that's what it is. And I'm not saying don't DIY, don't try out, don't experiment. I don't want to say that. Just be aware that you have to ensure that things have been properly cured. So we have a process that allows us to cure the product faster. And part of this has to also do with the fact that now we have a good percentage of plastic in the product. It's not entirely just the substrate. If we were trying to cure a 1 kilogram rock of cured material, of course, it's going to take way longer than if we're trying to cure a smaller portion of it. So that has it's given us a balance, I think, in the manufacturing process to be able to deploy a method that we use to ensure that the product is cured, and then you receive it and ready to go, take it out of the box, looks nice, right? And then you're excited, you move your ants in, and everybody's happy. So.
So how long from you've poured it on Wednesday till you can sell it or ship it officially?
So ideally, we would have it on the box packed on a Friday.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And then the average shipping, 2-3 days to 5 days if it's within Canada, right? So by the time you get it out of the box, the product's pretty much ready to use.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, that's smart thinking. Yeah. So... that's really impressive how long it takes to manufacture one nest. That's I really love hearing insights of this, because you get a different respect when you actually have the finished material and looking at it, because you know how much labor that went into making one of these nests. So you touched a little bit upon how white tongue blocks are not really accessible in Canada, but if everything was able, if you could do anything you wanted with your products, no limitations, what would you do different to what you do now?
I mean, what would be really cool to have is the capacity to have every single product injection molded. I guess I'm talking a very internal manufacturing point of view. So I wouldn't necessarily change the product itself per se, but how we make it. So if instead of having to ask the printer to make it, we already had injection molding going on. So that would mean we would have a plastic piece with no layer lines from the printer at all whatsoever. Like, you would just see a smooth plastic surface, right? And then more importantly, that part is ready. Injection molding, you have to produce, I don't know, 1,000, 5,000, 10,000 parts. So you have huge batches of that material. So whenever the product needs to be assembled, everything is ready. So then what you would get out of the box, in theory, should be even more impressive, because the removing the layer lines from the product, right? Even though we try our best to have the 3D printing capacity look nice, if we were able to remove entirely the layer lines, it would, in my opinion, I think it would look even better. But that's expensive. It's expensive. That's the one thing that I do like about things right now with the 3D printing side of the business. When you 3D print something, you gain an advantage that if by any chance one day you go, oh, you know what? I can make a small little tiny improvement here. Like, I have feedback from 3 customers basically telling me, hey, it'll be awesome if you could put here a latch. You know, so. Oh, okay, yeah, we can add a latch to it. That's doable. And then you do the design, you change it, and then it's ready. It's done. The next product can now have that feature. If you injection mold 10,000 parts, right? Okay, well, if you want to change the product, you got to wait until you sell the 10,000 parts, or you're just going to have to waste the plastic and then produce another batch so that you can start selling them, right? So there is an advantage to 3D printing that it creates the evolution of the product in real time.
Yeah, and what I also really enjoy with companies is as long as they stay small, or not stay small directly, but in touch with the community, things like people can go in and say, we have these difficulties and these difficulties, then you can actually go in and actually fix them, solve the problems, which is a little bit harder with massive companies. But that's one of the perks of having these small, closer to the community type of stores. So, of course, now I don't quite know if I can ask this, if I'm allowed to ask this by Lexi, if it's okay to get a little bit of inside knowledge. But do you have any future nests you're currently working on? You said you were testing something. Is there any future and up-and-coming nests?
He always has something in the works. Like, he's always making things. Just to clarify, he has an engineering background. And he's like a science geek. So every product that is available to you from Poromore, there's a lot of like thinking behind it. There's a lot of testing, a lot of investigating. There's science, and you could sit here and talk to him for hours on why ventilation works the way that it works and the reason why his ventilation is in that specific spot. And like, he can tell you scientifically why things are made the way that they are here at Poromore, and I don't even bother to try to understand. He's just way smarter when it comes to that. So everything that is made, there is science behind it when it comes to our products. So when he's saying that he's testing something, he's really just making sure that his science brain is talking to his engineering brain, and it still looks cute and it still looks nice, right? So he makes sure that it's functional. It does what it's supposed to do, and he tries to make sure that any possible mistake can be won't be like, you know, too horrific or anything like that. Like, he has probably 10 projects that he's working on. Maybe 5 of them will make it to the shop. And the other 5 will continue to work on, and then they might be the next 5 to go into the shop. So he always has things coming. Now, if he has anything specific that he wants to release right now, that's up to him.
That is the question. What do I feel like it's ready? But I do have 2 things that I think are ready. So the new tunneling formicarium, right? The substrate, the soil right inside of the Owl, that product, I want to offer the Owl without the glass, the dual glass on the side. So if you just want an Owl and want to make sure you have all of that ventilation going on, then okay, yes, you can purchase it by itself, not just the Owl side. And I think it's good because 2 panels of plastic on opposite sides of the product have complete ventilation lines from side to side, from top to bottom. So that in itself is already a lot of flow of air. And then to top it off, the lid on the top, the lid on the top, you have ventilation lines as well on the lid on the top. So I think there's a lot of airflow, and that's one of the biggest challenges that sometimes we have with too much humidity in the world. And then the other product that I'm working on revolves around the same concept, the same Owl, but with the dual glass panel, I want to be able to have a test tube inside of the glass panel, if I can say that, because I'm gonna have some absorbent material at the bottom that you can hydrate from the outside, like you would do on a nest, And so let's say cotton, right? And then the rest of the glass panel is going to be populated by plastic chambers. So in other words, it's the tunneling idea of an ant farm, right? But instead of having soil and the ants making the chambers, you'll have pre-made plastic chambers and then the cotton at the bottom, sort of like you would have in a test tube.
Absolutely.
The other thing, because you're going to see them at the end of the day in between glass, which is a test tube. One side is going to have the water and the other side has your opening, but it's already inside of an ant world. So it's the tubs and tubes set up, but with a tube attached to the wall kind of deal. Not as a test tube, but a sandwich glass. And the other thing I'm doing with this project is that there's chambers distributed across the nesting area, but they're blocked with cotton. Right now I have like all these little tiny cotton plugs so that they can only be in the certain amount of chambers that I consider small enough for them. The current test has a 4 millimeter gap between the glass panels on a almost 4 centimeter tall wall. And I blocked off all of the unnecessary chambers. So what I have calculated is that I have a colony of the Tremorium immigrants in that setup. The space that they're populating right now is 75% smaller than the space I would have in a typical system 16 millimeter test tube. This is because the sandwich of glass of 4 millimeters is way smaller than the whole diameter of a circle inside of a test tube. So somewhat, we have a lot of visibility because the small sandwich of glass allows for extreme visibility. You can see every single egg in there. Yet the space provided to them is not as much as you would do otherwise in other setups that we may have, right? Trying to get the biggest ant form or biggest formicarium, right? So I'm excited for that one, yeah.
That's some hardcore calculation you just threw out right there. Can definitely see what Lexi says with you mix up the two scientists and engineer together. So a question for both of you, both visually and just producing the nest. What would you say is your favorite nest of all of the products you've made?
Lexi first, I don't know.
So hard.
It's the one that stands out.
Yeah, so I really like the honey cell because it's cute. but then I also really like the cave, the mini cave, in the cave 2.0. I don't think I can pick one.
Well, maybe yeah. What about you, Jahir?
Well, oh, you know what? I'm going to pick one. I'm going to pick one that was never released.
It was never released.
It was never released. Yeah. It was actually the Ying Yang nest. It was given, we used it for a giveaway on Discord. But there was a Ying Yang nest that we created. And by far, that was my favorite one. The way that it looked in itself was really cool.
Yeah, so this nest was a relatively medium format, 10 by 10 centimeters square. And at the I guess as much as possible on its inside, you had the yin-yang symbol circle. So one side, the substrate was white, and on the other side the substrate was black. And the little circles that you have, the little tiny small dots that you have inside of the yin yang right on each half, that's where the water chamber was located. So you would fill it up from the side, but you would see the water appearing inside of the yin yang. The only reason why it is now that she reminds me, yeah, that cool looked very, very, that nest looked very, very cool. And the whole reason why I just never really decided to go forward with it, the problem is that the black substrate, even though it looks very cool, I think it only looks very cool when brand new. The black substrate is more likely to accumulate some debris and minerals and whatnot, and you know that end up turning more like a grayish, whitish color. So if it's pitch black and you have a little tiny bit of white accumulation on it, it just looks very contrasting. It starts to accumulate a lot more than you would think. And then the second problem was, well, unfortunately, statistically speaking, the majority of the ants that we're keeping have a darker coloration. I wish we had more golden ants in Canada, but not really right now. So evolution didn't go that way. So it just makes it a little bit harder for you to see. And if you're photographing, I've just been more comfortable, like what you mentioned. I also photograph my ants. So yes, I also enjoy a lot photographing through glass. But more importantly, I prefer if the substrate is more of a neutral color. So, and I think that's what the cave is trying to do also with the gray tone. Not necessarily giving you the white for photography, but giving you that neutral gray. So yeah, I kind of moved away from the contrast. Maybe we should do the yin yang, but put the color of the cave instead of the black tone, and that would work, I think, probably much better.
Still be able to see the logo or the sign at least. Would you say that's also your favorite nest, or do you have another favorite nest?
I really like the classic formicarium. I think it's very, very. I like the function of it, how the water distributes around it, and how the space is used. Very, very efficient. The classic, again, measured 10x10, but you used almost.
Is it called the classic?
Yeah, it's called the classic formicarium. That's very, very authentic name. But I think that's why I went with this whole concept of a classic, because it does what a formicarium is supposed to do in a traditional sense. You know, can I put as much ants as possible in this little space? And have them well hydrated. So there was no outstanding features than to say, yeah, this is just trying to represent our view of the classic formicarium, right? From our style. Yeah, there's the classic. Sorry, go ahead.
I've just taken a look at them, and yeah, they do look really cool. Very big. Looks very big, at least compared to the jumbo cell or the cave 2.0. It looks a lot bigger. At least how many ants that can be inside, picture wise.
Surface area, you do have more on the classic surface. Yeah. Internal area. The cave gives you more. I think the main benefit of the cave is, I think that's really the nest that was designed for photographers, because you can illuminate from one side.
Exactly.
Of the nest, the glass panel, and then you can take pictures from the other side, and then it gives you that openness, that open area, so that the lens can somehow get multiple angles against that wall, right, to get different shots. When you have a nest that only has one panel of viewing, and all of these BC walls and obstacles getting in the way, sometimes it can get a little bit hard to photograph. If by any chance you just cannot get in the right angle, or the glare, and then you know, all of these technical things start to happen, right?
I can't say anything, but I completely agree. It's there's a lot of struggles with recording a flat nest compared to recording when you can get a lot of lights from two directions. And yeah, I must say it's been enjoyable working with the Portmore Arts recording wise, because both the glass is easier to look inside. They don't really scratch up, so you have a clear view inside. And yeah, with the cave, there's also the chance to get lights from above. So I must also ask, because now we've heard a little bit about how you produce the nest. So do you have like a least favorite nest to produce? Like, of course, you can't go out and say, oh man, I got an order. Oh, that's annoying. But is there one of the nests where you're just a little bit annoyed due to the manufacturing time?
No, I get what you're saying. I know I really enjoy making, for example, the culture tube and the test tube array formicariums. The formicaria design for the test tube array, in my opinion, is very efficient for me as a manufacturer, but also for the user. Yeah. And by the way, I think the culture tube formicarium, I think the culture tube formicarium is one of the most underrated products that we make. But I think it's because it's a very complicated product. Not complicated to use, but complicated to grasp the potential. I really like also making the culture too for Mecarium. It has parts to it, so the water evaporator module can be detached and serviced without having the ants escape all over the place. So having a completely detachable, replaceable water unit to me is important, because if by any chance you put the wrong water or it starts to scale and the mineral deposits, okay, I can take it out and just wash it, right? Not kill the entire colony or drown everybody trying to move the water. You know what I mean? Like, being able to completely detach the water source is very important. It features a connection module, which gives you that the capacity to, again, connect stuff to it. So the connection module joins the water module, and then the culture tube, which is just simply a test tube with the substrate or maybe the plain plastic, depending which one you prefer. And being able to just remove that tube, take it out, and put it somewhere else, I think that makes things very practical. And being able to attach more modules to it next to, like, you know, try to follow a display of culture tubes right next to each other, for example. You can just keep connecting and connecting and connecting, make a very modular setup. And the last has a heating cable portion, which can be located on the water module or on the connection module or both, or right under the test tube, whichever you prefer. And then last, well, you have your black jacket covering the tube, giving you that darkness, and your film and everything on the connection module, if that's what you want to do, right? And all of this is, I'm not saying it's easy to make, but it's relatively simple, because whenever I use a test tube for a product, I don't have to worry about cutting that glass or preparing that glass part. The test tube basically comes out of the box ready to be used. And the test tubes that we purchase are, I guess we can define them as laboratory grade, in the sense that they're ready to be used and they're clean. They're sterilized. They're glass, so I don't have to worry about washing it and processing and cutting anything. So it's very, 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 very simple. It cuts down on the time to work with glass. I guess that's the thing. Most of the products that also don't rely on magnets are also relatively faster to produce, because less curing time and adhesives and whatnot. So the culture tube for Mecarium requires no adhesives, no hard adhesives, no complicated parts. Does all of the functionality that I just mentioned, which in my opinion is amazing to have all of those functions in just one tiny test tube setup. Oh, and the last thing, and it uses, you have the capacity to attach a traditional test tube to the module, if that's what you want to do, or put a small insert or a medium insert, or use the entire tube for having a colony. So yeah, I think that product should be selling more often. And on top of that, the price, when you look at the price, because it's easier to manufacture than other items, is not as expensive. So yeah, I think that's a really, really nice product that is not as popular as it could be, and it's one of my favorites. Again, the culture tube was designed with me trying to keep as many colonies as efficient as possible. So picture, I don't know, a 3-meter heating cable on a long, flat rack. And then how many culture tubes can you stack right next to each other following this heating cable on the water module? So on those 3 meters, you can easily put 75 of them.
Yeah, you can put a lot.
Yeah, and then be able to visually inspect all of them very, very quickly. And if by any chance one of them is starting to run dry, the water bottle is visible right there in front of your face, right? It's popping up from the module. You just simply disconnect it, pull it. The ants are not going to escape. There's a metal mesh preventing them from running out when you disconnect the module. And then flip the bottle over so you don't spill the water, right? You just flip it back to its upright position, unscrew it, refill, screw it up again, turn it over, plug it in again, done. That's it. Brand new water serving for that colony.
Yeah, that I'm just sitting here looking at the pictures. That is a really well engineered. Lots of thoughts have gone into the product. It looks really cool, must say. But we are at the end of this podcast now. this has been an interview with Pour More Arts. And for all of the listeners out there, where can we find you guys?
You can find us on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube, and Discord. And then we have our website, www.pourmoreart.ca.
All right. Yeah, that's quite a few areas. So yeah, I want to say thank you for coming in, Pour More Arts. It's been I really love talking with people who design NES, because there's so many thoughts that goes into these, and it's, yeah, as a guy who don't know how to do anything, I'm very fascinated about hearing these things. So yeah, I want to say it's been very enjoyable having both of you here on the podcast, and also thank you, the listener, for listening in to the AntPod. The AntPod releases new episodes every Wednesday, and care guides once every few weeks. If there's a topic you want to hear about, send a message to the AntPod Instagram. And with that, you will hear more from us at the AntPod next week.